Welcome to the E-Commerce Fuel Podcast, your headquarters for building a six-figure plus e-commerce business. I'm your host, e-commerce entrepreneur, and Jeff Bezos wannabe, Andrew Derry. Hey guys, it's Andrew here, and welcome to the E-Commerce Fuel Podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in today. Really appreciate it. Today on the show, we're going to be talking about how much you should be focusing on your competition. What's a healthy level? Should you be obsessing? Should you ignore them completely? Where's that balance? And what are the implications for your online store? And joining me is someone who I know is crazy competitive, Mr. Bill D'Alessandro. Bill, welcome, buddy.
Thanks. How's it going?
It's going well. Thank you. So I want to dive into that. But before we do, of course, got to do a first sale shout out. And this one's going out to Scott Rundell from smoothwindkites.com. And he says, my father and I just launched our e-commerce business and made our very first sale today. It's an incredibly exhilarating feeling, and I owe a great deal of our progress to your blog, book, and podcast. Just want to take a moment to thank you for all the incredible content. Scott, awesome, man. Congratulations. I hear you on the exhilaration there. It's about as good as you can feel in business, that first sale. So checked out your website. It looks really sharp, by the way. Really professional. Looks like you got a really cool, unique line of kites. So if you're in that market, you live on the beach, or you just got a two-year-old and want to have some fun, head over to the site and check that stuff out. So competition. Bill, this is going to be interesting because I teased you about being competitive at the top, but you're one of the most competitive guys I know. I mean, heck, we just got off the last episode and, you know, episode ended before we made a wager and a bet. So it'll be interesting to see your thoughts on this. You know, there's a lot of different facets to competition that we're going to touch on. But I think one of the most important places where you do need to obsess about your competition and the market competition is in the early stages of starting a store. You know, when you're getting into the market, when you're considering, or even if you have a store and you're considering a new product line or building a product, so many people come in not understanding the competitive marketplace and it blows up on them. And that's, if you're going to obsess anywhere, I think that's the place to obsess.
Yep. Upfront, when you're trying to figure out if a market is viable or not.
Yeah. How do you do that? Like, Bill, when you bought Nurture My Body, how long, can you give me a sense of like, what does that process look like for you? How much time do you invest in that? What kind of things are you looking at thinking about getting into a market?
Sure. So I think there's really two scenarios here. One is if you're starting a new business, and two is if you're buying an existing business. For starting a new business, I think, Andrew, you've even done some good blog posts on how to validate. Is there search traffic here? Is there AdWords traffic here? Things like that. How can I get these products? What price do I get them? At what price can I sell them? Things like that. So I'll refer people to your blog for that. Also, Tim Ferriss has written a couple good blog posts about demand validation even before you launch your brand. But when I bought Nurture My Body, the first thing I did was ask the owner, who are your biggest competitors? Who do you lose sales to? What other companies are your customers buying products from? And you should expect a big list. If they say there aren't any, that would worry me, because it means one of two things. It means either A, the market is tiny and they're the only ones serving it and they've probably saturated it, or B, they're lying to you, or maybe even C, they're incompetent and they don't even know.
And you're buying a business from that they've been running for the last 2 years.
Yeah. Right, exactly. There probably are 20 people out there eating their lunch that they're not even aware of. So they should give you a big old list, and that list is good. And so what I did then is I went to all of the websites of all of those brands and I kind of asked myself, how professional are these guys? I try to look around to see if I could estimate their revenue. Sometimes companies will say in their marketing, like, one of these is sold every minute around the world. Well, that's, you know, tens of millions of dollars of revenue. So you can try to suss out, how big do I think these competitors are? And if they've got a lot of big competitors, it definitely tells you there's a big market, but at the same time, they might be kind of tough to knock off. So in the sense of Nurture My Body, obviously organic personal care, beauty, et cetera, is a massive market. You don't need to do much research to know that that's a big market. But the list of competitors that they gave me, it was interesting because it was mostly mid-sized companies. The competition was not L'Oreal or, you know, these huge cosmetics giants. It was much more, you know, brands that were purpose-built to serve this organic and natural channel. And they're big, for sure, tens or hundreds of millions, but they're not billions. They're not huge conglomerates. They're not big public companies. So I said, all right, this market is big enough to support lots of good-sized, healthy competitors. But I think we can do something differently here. You know, I know there's search volume for this. I know there's a bunch of people out here that want to buy this. Now your only task is just to convince them that your product is different. And notice I didn't say better. I just said different. It's a Coke Pepsi thing. Is Coke or Pepsi better? You could have a whole, you know, nationwide debate on that. But the fact of the matter is really they're just different and people have preferences. So if you can find a way to make your product different and appeal to preferences that might not be being addressed, your product doesn't have to be better. It just has to be different.
Yeah, I remember when I was starting the radio business, looking around, and the biggest thing I did, obviously, you hit the nail on the head. You need to find an intersection of demand that's not enormous so you can't climb that mountain, but also not so small that there's no market there, and also differentiation and having something unique, or at least doing something better, either that's a unique product or a better service. But I remember just going around, and one of the biggest things I looked at was just how well, like, who were the competitors? Like, what, when I would put myself in the shopper's shoes and go around and visit the websites and assess them on how professional they were. I would call some of them to see how well their service was. I'd look at their website, all that kind of thing. And I think at the end of the day, if you can't really clearly say, here's why I would buy from my business versus one of these other businesses, and you can't convince someone else of that, you're going to have a really hard time. And that's an area where competitive analysis and obsession about competitors is important. I think it's also important once you get up and running, your business is off the ground. You don't want to completely ignore competitors. Personally, like, I'll check in with some of our competitors like every, you know, three to four months or so. I like to see, do they have a new website? Are there any new products that maybe or lines I should be focusing on? Is there something they're doing at their website or their marketing really interesting that, hey, maybe I can take a cue from? So I don't know about you, Bill, but I do that maybe on a quarterly basis. What's your competitor, like, roughly? Are you checking in on people that frequently or more frequently?
You know, I think that's actually a pretty good time frame, once quarterly, which is, I don't have a schedule, but that's probably roughly what it shakes out for me. But the other thing that I do that helps me kind of keep on top of them without much effort is I subscribe to all of their email newsletters.
Ah, nice.
So, you know, you just go to their website and stick in your email address, and then you're basically going to get a weekly update of exactly what's going on with them. So, you know, they launch a new product, they're going to send out an email, or they're going to do a promotion, or you'll be able to tell, like, are they couponing heavily? Are they undercutting me dramatically, you know, that way? And then you go to the website every couple months and just check what their overall prices are, have they redesigned, et cetera.
Yeah, that's man, we need to get an evil genius laugh inserted in there. That's a good one. So, you know, obviously it's not terrible to watch what your competitors are doing. I think the big mistake people make is obsessing over what your competitors are doing. I think that's really highly counterproductive. If you're every day checking out your competitors, if once a week you spend 4 hours doing price comparisons, you know, if you're investing a lot of your time into software that tracks exactly what products are being priced at your competitors, a rough road is probably ahead of you for a couple different reasons. I think one, this is time you're not improving your business, right? You're looking at somebody else and you're trying to either play catch up or mirror them. You're not marketing your business and you're not improving it. That's number one. Number two, it means you're not leading from a place of vision. You know, you're not leading with a unique proposition, with a value add to people, but you're trying to play catch up. And that's a really, more than anything, I mean, obviously it's got implications for your business, but it's a dangerous mindset to be in too. I think the businesses that are really successful are the ones who are the leaders in their field and not the ones who are really fretting about what's going on with other places. And, you know, number three is, I think most of the results competitively, you don't need to look at other sites to figure out what your pricing should be. You should be, all of that data is implicitly built into what your customers do, right? If your sales are going way down, I mean, it might help to maybe during those checks, maybe it's good to find out why that's happening. But if you're doing price testing, you shouldn't be pricing based on what your competition is pricing on. You should be running price tests based on what makes you the most money. And all of that is going to be built in, you know, your customer's pricing is going to be built into that data. So it's the obsession, I think, that really can hurt people.
Yeah. And that's a good point about pricing too. If, I mean, look at your own business, and I really hope for your sake that you're not competing only on price. I mean, if price is your only lever, you're probably in trouble.
Yeah.
If you're out there listening and you think price is the only way that you can compete, well, guess what? If you start to be successful competing on price, what is your biggest competitor going to do? Match your price, and now you're screwed. And they'll drive you out of business. So, and also too, I think this is a fallacy, is that most e-commerce store owners are very competent online, and they're business minded. They kind of watch their money. And so they assume that everyone is like them, and they assume that everyone is comparison shopping. One of the kind of the big revelations that I've come to, you know, over years selling stuff online is a lot of times people just buy stuff and they don't shop around for alternatives and they don't see if they can get it cheaper on another site a lot of times. Of course, it does happen. People do price compare, but not everyone is super ultra price sensitive. Someone, it might be more expensive from you, it might be a dollar more expensive from you, but they've already got an account with you. And it's easy checkout and they'll just buy it from you. Or it might be a couple bucks more expensive from you and they still feel as though it's a fair price and it's more than it's what they're willing to pay to solve whatever problem this product solves. And they don't even need to waste their time shopping around and they just buy it. So if you're obsessing over price compares, don't. You should really be focusing on, is the price I'm charging worth the value that the customer is getting? And the value the customer gets is not just the product, but it's the convenience of buying from your site. It's the trust that they view your site. It's the customer service. It's all of that too.
Yeah, I think there's a psychological, for entrepreneurs, there's a psychological barrier to raising your prices, because I think there's this deep-seated fear that says, if I raise my prices, my business is going to grind to a screeching halt, you know? And I've mentioned this before on the podcast. Some of the best things I've ever done for my business have been to raise prices. And even knowing that, it still is a really scary thing to do, knowing I can roll them back if I need to.
Yep. When I bought Nurture My Body, we raised prices on everything 5 to 15%. And if looking back, if I hadn't done that, we would be in trouble. As far as, because when you sell wholesale and you go through distributors and everybody takes bites of your margins, that stuff wouldn't have been possible if we hadn't raised our MSRPs.
Yeah. And for me, it was just that I didn't have that wholesale channel, but it was because it was drop shipping and the margins were small to begin with. It just profits were like up 35% overnight. Bam. You know, one of the best things you can do for your business. So
huge lever in drop shipping for sure.
Enormous lever in drop shipping. Yeah. So Amazon, jack those prices up so that we don't have to compete with you on low prices.
Right.
another thing is with your competitors. I mean, you kind of touched on this too, Bill. I think we all have this idea that the competitors are so savvy and everything is in order and they are just sitting there behind this perfectly orchestrated machine. And it's almost never the case, right? People just, you know, intrinsically, I mean, it's just in human nature, we tend to underestimate ourselves and overestimate our competition. And you have no idea what's going on behind that curtain from your competitor. You have no idea if the pricing they're running is working well. You have no idea if the ad campaign is highly profitable or is a huge money suck and they're just pouring money down the drain. You have no idea if a product is profitable for them. You can see what they're doing. You have no idea on how it's impacting your business. And, you know, so keep that in mind. Don't just assume that everyone is, because they're doing something, it's helping them out.
And, you know, the funny thing is they might not even know.
Yeah.
Small business as a rule is so unsophisticated that your competitor probably doesn't, he might be like way underpricing you on some product and you're like, how's he making money? I got to match him. He might be losing his shirt on that product. He just has no idea because it's buried in his metrics and he's never looked at.
I've got a really good buddy who just started working at a business, and you see this business from the outside. It looks so polished, so put together. You know, if you just, somebody asks you, what do you think the back end is like? You just say, oh, it's just, you know, incredible. Accountants, you know, working in perfectly polished, clean office spaces. Like, but talking to him, you know, he's just told me it's crazy. It's just madness. It's unorganized and it's nuts. And I think it's one of the secret, you know, the pieces of dirty laundry with most small businesses is, and even my own, you know, I'll be put it out there. There's a lot of things we do that are pretty ghetto that people would probably be surprised by is most small businesses are much not as sophisticated as you might imagine. So don't see everything that they're doing as gospel, the gospel road to profitability. You know, it's interesting too. We had somebody, and on the flip side, I don't think this is the case, but there's even some extreme examples where businesses, really tech savvy businesses in sophisticated markets, could do stuff to trick you. You know, I know I've heard stories about people with IP addresses, like tracking the IP of their competitors and then throwing up crazy pricing or promotions that would lead them to, you know, pretty much ruin. And like, I think that's much rarer than people having very unprofitable campaigns by accident, but you got to be careful of both of those. So Bill, have you ever had anyone knock your site off?
I did.
You did?
And what I had someone knock my product off not 3 months ago.
Okay. So what do you do when competitors completely rip you off? I think that's an interesting subtopic.
And if you're listening, I'm coming for you, whoever you are. But these guys knocked my product off on Amazon. They knocked off KP Elements. And they did it poorly. You could tell that they had very little experience formulating skincare products because, without getting too far into it, my product is 10% acid, which is about as strong as you can get without chemically burning people. You do need acid in it to help with the treatment, but any much higher, and we did testing and we arrived at 10%. Their product is 15% acid, which is just absurd. Like people are going to be suing them or returning it or whatever. They're going to be giving people chemical burns.
Suing them or suing you?
Oh, them, because my product is safe. But they basically launched another product, 4KP, the treatment that my product treats, on Amazon, ripped off large portions of my listing text and text also from my website. It was their own formula, but they ripped off a lot of my marketing. And so I've been slugging it out with them over the past 3 months to try to re-differentiate my product to show people that, you know, you need to buy from a trusted brand, things like that. It sucks that there's nothing you can do.
Yeah, that's tough. And it's interesting because in your experience, you had somebody rip off. When they ripped you off, did they rip off the brand, like your product and the name and the brand? Or did they?
No.
They didn't. Okay.
No.
Okay. Yeah, because you get into there, that's something where it's a little bit easier to combat. In our case, like we've had, especially, you know, one of the rough things that comes with a little bit about blogging about some of the stores that we run is seeing knockoff stores verbatim, you know, of like the radio site, of the trolling motor site. And it's tough. And, you know, if it's not verbatim, you know, if they haven't stolen exact pictures and exact copy, and especially if you're selling an existing product, you know, your differentiation is in your service or the value add you add with information or your marketing. At that point, I just kind of look at it and say, you know what? Are you really adding anything? You know, are you innovating in any way? You have to out execute me at that point. And I'm not worried about that because most people that have to steal ideas verbatim are not going to be able to out execute you. We've had cases though too, where people have stolen, like just lifted entire sections of our site and pictures and stuff. And in that case, not always, but most of the time when I've reached out to people and said, just written a very, you know, not rude, but a very firm, hey, you ripped off all of our stuff, take it down now, or we'll pursue legal action. Majority of the time, it ends up going down. So.
Yep. And a good tip for that is when you send that letter, if you send it on your law firm's letterhead, it makes people really worried.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Find the engagement letter. If you've ever done any work with a lawyer, find the document they sent you. Change the names to your own law firm incorporated, you know, so it looks like a law firm and you can just say, I represent Andrew Udarian. Please stop or we will pursue legal action.
Or just go to a local law firm and offer them $25 for 100 pieces of the letterhead and see what
you could do that too.
I would imagine they're not going to look too kindly on that.
No.
Yeah. You know, I think the bottom line with all of this is checking out competition in early stages and occasionally to keep a pulse on the industry, that's healthy, right? But you need to focus primarily on building an amazing business with fanatical customers because ultimately that's going to be far more effective at the end of the day than worrying, fretting, spying on your competitors, trying to play catch up because it's just for all the reasons we discussed. So there's an interesting book and actually I just started reading/listening to this on Audible, but I listened to it after we came up with kind of the rough outline for this podcast. It's Peter Thiel, who is the co-founder of PayPal. It's a book called Zero to One, and it's really interesting. One of the better books I've read recently, and it's all about competition, particularly competition not being good. He kind of takes the case that a lot of people say, hey, get into a competitive market. Competition's good for the economy and business and consumers. But his whole standpoint is, no, competition's terrible. It's great for consumers, but for a business, if you're trying to build a business, it kills profits. And you know, his real take is the best businesses are monopolies, not illegal monopolies, not monopolies where you strong arm people and force people out of business, kind of like John Rockefeller did to build Standard Oil, but monopolies where you create something so incredible or do something so well that nobody else can touch that. And that's where you want to be. So it's
Amazon.com. It's not a monopoly, but they're untouchable.
So he comes up with like these four ideas that you need for monopoly. And I'm trying to remember them off the cuff, but he says you need some kind of, you know, brand, which they have. You need technology, which, you know, does Amazon do anything better? I mean, I guess you could argue that their distribution is better than everyone else.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, you could make the case. That's interesting. Maybe there'll be another episode. Is Amazon a monopoly?
Right.
So we can go head to head. But yeah, it's an interesting book, definitely worth reading. It takes a little bit of a different approach to competition than you might otherwise have heard.
So. I think the reason for that is if you've got a lot of competitors in a market and you're all making 20% margin, eventually, you know, it's kind of like a Mexican standoff. Everybody's got the gun pointed at each other's heads. And then everybody looks around and go, we're all making 20% margin. And then somebody goes, if I could make 19% margin, I would capture a lot more of the market. And they change their price. And then everybody else drops to, you know, they win the market for a month. And then everybody else drops to 19% margin. And it's a race to the bottom. And the more competition, the more quickly that happens.
Yeah, but it's interesting because you always hear the point as well from people, hey, look at competition as good, because if people are competing in a market, it means there's money there, right? And so, yes, that's true. But if you're selling, and this kind of comes back to the old brand versus reselling other people's product idea, is yeah, ultimately in the long run, if you're just selling a commodity and there's no risk or no purchasing hesitations, yeah, prices are going to go to zero more or less. And one of the big, of course, benefits of having your own brand is you don't have to compete with people. So really, if you have your own brand, it's really a mini monopoly. And I think he kind of mm-hmm. says that in the book as well. So
that's a great way to put it. A brand is a mini monopoly.
It is. Maybe I'll steal that, even though he probably came up with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome. Bill, well, hey, I'm off to check my competitors, so it's been fun.
Good to talk with you, Andrew. This is great.
Thanks, Bill. Talk to you soon. That's going to do it for this week. But if you're interested in launching your own e-commerce store, download my free 55-page ebook on niche selection and getting started. And if you're a bit more experienced, look into the E-Commerce Fuel private forum. It's a vetted community for store owners with at least 4,000 in monthly sales or industry professionals with at least a year or more experience in the e-commerce space. You can learn more about both the ebook and the form at ecommercefuel.com. Thanks so much for listening, and I'm looking forward to seeing you again next Friday.